0818-715-815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Padraig Harrington. Padraig, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Why, are you glad you're not out on a golf course on a day like this?
No, I've actually just come in from practicing, it's nice to see a bit of sunshine.
And you know, on a day like this in Ireland, half the country wants to be on a golf course. So I appreciate you coming in and talking to us. How are you keeping?
I'm keeping well, very well, actually.
That's good, that's good. We do the merger first, or call it, sports washing. As more information emerges, what do you think of this? What time the tweet came out, I think, about 72 hours ago, but 10 past 3 on June the 6th. The PGA Tour, yeah. DP World Tour and PIF, that's the Saudi Public Investment Fund, announced a landmark agreement to unify men's professional sport. Were you surprised when you saw the tweet?
Everybody was exceptionally surprised. It came from nowhere. What's interesting about it is, you know, obviously a lot of the talk has been about, oh, there's more money, the PGA Tour have gone to try and take more money, they're backtracking. It's a huge backtrack. It's a huge U-turn by the PGA Tour. And the likely reason is they were forced into it. You know, there was a big lawsuit going on. Yeah. They were rumoured to be losing half their TV revenues. The PGA Tour looks like they could have been in financial turmoil. And they were forced into acting now or leave it to a year's time and they'll be in a worse position. So it's not a question. There's not a single player on the PGA Tour that in any shape or form was looking for more money at this stage. Everybody who's left behind is exceptionally happy with where they were. So it's a complete shock to them. I don't think the PGA Tour, even though it might end up that there's more money in the game, I don't think the PGA Tour were seeking that. They were worried about their own sustainability because they've actually stretched themselves so much trying to compete with LIV.
And the LIV Tour, as it's called, because they've so much money behind them, there was no stopping them. Is that what you think?
Well, yeah, people thought that they'd go away and that wasn't very competitive. But the two, with Brooks really winning the last major, put a lot of things to hang on a second. This thing could actually succeed. But it really is. This is a case of two were going to court who were suing each other and neither wanted to get into that.
Okay,
and so somebody stepped in and said, right, hang on a second, we're not going to go to court. We've got to settle this. And these are the terms that we don't fully know yet, but these are the terms they came up with to avoid what could have been catastrophic for the PGA Tour.
And what do the Saudis get out of it, do you think, Padraig? Is it sports
washing?
Well,
they get two things.
Yeah, okay.
Well, look, the Saudis have bought Newcastle. Nobody stopped watching the Premiership. Yeah, yeah. Everybody still watched that. Everybody watched the World Cup. You know, so if sports washing, unfortunately, does work. Investing in things like this does work. I guarantee you there's somebody in Newcastle who thinks more positively about Saudi Arabia now because they own the team. So it does work in that sense. And Saudi Arabia are free to invest in what they want to. Unless somebody comes in and says stops them, like a UN or somebody, they're free to do this. The fact is that they do have a lot of money. Yeah. And if they take an interest in something, they can back it for a long time. They want to create, their goal is to be the hub of the Middle East. So they're actually trying to overtake Dubai and Abu Dhabi and be the center of business and tourism in the Middle East. That's really their stated goal is not the world. Their stated goal is we want to be number one in the Middle East. And one of the controversial things I said in the tweet was, you know, hang on a second, we don't, like, as a positive, being included and not excluding somebody tends to change them. So I've been going out to the Middle East for 25 years. You can't believe how much that has changed. Okay. I've been going to you can go to China, okay? Mm-hmm. China is one of the most authoritarian governments in the world. Yeah. You know, potentially they talk about wars with the US. Like, you go to the cities in China, unbelievable cities. People buzzing around, the most capitalistic, the most Western cities you can see. There's shopping malls I can't afford to shop in. Like, it's just incredible. So eventually all that is going to seep up to the power and will change their society. It might take 50 years. And this is the same with Saudi Arabia. I'd love to swing. if I had a magic wand and I could go in and say, hey, look, we want you to adhere to our, you know, to the norms of human rights, that what we all consider to be completely normal, I'd wave that wand. But forcing them to do it will only make them backtrack. They have to do it on their own terms, which is, you know, we'd all love it to happen today. But if somebody said in 25 years, like we look back now at the mother and baby homes, if somebody said in 25 years, hey, God, look at Saudi Arabia, look what it was like and look what it's now. I don't know if that's acceptable to people, that it would take 25 years for women to get proper rights. I just, you know, that's just, I don't know if that's acceptable. We just can't wave a magic wand right now. And I'm, look, the interesting thing about this, golf gets bashed a lot in the media. Okay. The four Irish golfers did not go. We all said no.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We should, like, you know, Rory said no to 400 million. Wow. Shane said no to life-changing money. Myself and Darren, we didn't go. Like Darren had a fantastic contract on the table to go and commentate. Like, you know, we didn't do it. And yet golf is getting bashed. We're actually the ones who actually took a stand in some way. But now we also, my friends have gone, and I'm not going to judge their morals in any shape or form because they're doing nothing that's illegal in any shape or form. I don't judge anybody else's religion or anything like that. If you come from Australia and you decide to play in LIV, well, that's up to you. And what, by the way, you did ask what LIV get out of this.
LIV get
to have a go at trying to run their league without interference. So there's been massive interference with LIV. Everything that can be possibly done to stop LIV succeeding has been tried, and it's stuttered. And that's what they're going to get. They're going to get an opportunity without interference, and maybe their players will get an opportunity not feel like they're ostracized, and they'll see if it works. And, you know, who knows if it will work, because a lot of people don't like the idea of teams in golf. So who knows?
But the Saudi rep, the chairman of the public investment fund, the Saudi Arabian Yasimar Ramayan, he's the new chairman of the PGA. They will have a veto on who can invest in the PGA.
The three tours for the players seem to be as is. So there's no crossover of players. Yeah. There's nobody on the PGA Tour has to go and play in LIV. There's nobody has to do anything they don't want. That's it. There's a separate entity that all these things are going to be put into. That's for future investments. Now, at the current, to start it off, the PGA Tour are going to put, not the tour into it, but they're going to put their media rights into it and something else. European Tour are putting their media rights into and LIV are putting their media rights in. And for that, LIV are going to put money in as well to equalise it. That money, I assume, is going to be used as some sort of equalisation payment, probably to subsidise the PGA Tour for their massive loss of TV revenue. Massive loss of TV revenue. So it's going to equalise out, and then everybody will be, do your own thing.
But can bridges be mended, Pádraig? You know, the animosity that was generated. Rory McIlroy saying, and Tiger, of course, saying that they feel like sacrificial lambs, pardon the pun, on all of this. Rory fell out with Sergio Garcia, didn't he? Who was groomsman at his wedding.
I don't think, from what I've read, like Rory said, did a lovely press conference, I felt, the other day. He spoke really well. And the quotes that came out were so harsh. When you line up a quote out of a press conference, it stoked the fires of division. I have found individually, we don't have the division. So when I have a lot of Ryder Cup, my Ryder Cup players, five of them, I think, went. So they're my players for life.
Okay.
You know, I'm friends with them. I'm not going to, in any shape or form, not be friends with those guys. I made my decision. They made their decision. It's up to them. They didn't do anything that's not legal. So why should I judge what they think is right or wrong? That's not farming. But I will say that I think on the ground, players can get on and that. In a bigger picture, when the media gets involved and when groups get involved, that's when all of a sudden you do get division. At the moment, both the PGA Tour are spinning their side of it, and the LIV side are spinning their side. And the players in the middle don't know we don't know what's going on. We have no, we of course we know a little bit what's going on, but we have no, like, everything is guesswork. why, like, why did the PGA backtrack so much on this when there was no financial reason? Like, there was no player in any shape or form say, hey, we need to be playing for bigger prize funds. Like, we're all sitting there going, oh my God, the money we're playing for, how did we get to here? So nobody was pushing the tour. The tour could only have done this like any other hostile challenger comes in. They're the incumbent. And the tour obviously got to a situation that, you know, if we let this run any longer, we're actually going to go into a problem area, an area that they're going to actually, you know, they probably just stretch themselves too thin.
And would you characterize it as a hostile reverse takeover then? And now you've
I think, look, the Liv or PIF, they got, you know, they obviously didn't want to be deposed either and come or whatever they've been comes out in court, but they got inclusion in golf. They they want Saudi Arabia to be a golf destination. They want it to be a hot, like a biking destination. I've never been to Saudi Arabia, so. I don't know, but somebody says, you know, we all think that the Middle East is a desert, but clearly Saudi Arabia has some unbelievable, beautiful mountain areas and that, and they want it to be a destination for in the Middle East for people to go to, and golf has to be part of that. But if it happens, it will change their culture. It changed Dubai's culture. It changed the Middle East's culture.
So Abba said it all: money, money, money.
Yeah, you know, they got there because they have bigger power, but I think with the PGA Tour, it's the opposite. Instead of them trying to get more money, they were trying not to lose where they were at and be in a worse position down the road.
But given, I know you made the mother and baby homes analogy, and we've nothing to be proud of there as a country. We have, in every sense, tried to atone for it, but the situation for women in Saudi at the minute is unbelievable. The situation for people who are gay is shocking.
Isn't it incredible that in this day and age that it could be like that? Like, nobody can defend that. Nobody could. But let's hope that it changes. Let's hope it changes as quick as possible. Let's hope that pressure from the UN calling them out. Let's hope that inclusion. And I guarantee you, individually, you know, when you meet people individually and they mix and they get out, you know, individually people change. And then as they change, clearly that will move up the line and all of a sudden you'll have cultural change. And then, you know, I assume governments will follow after that. So, you know, maybe there's no stopping. You know, there is no stopping cultural change because the internet is there. Everybody can see. Everybody can see. And I know the problem in Saudi Arabia, clearly there's a woman in prison for tweeting. Yeah. Like that's just
bloggers
in our
bloggers
in our
are
world.
Flogged. Bloggers, yeah, if you like, criticise the state. I'm talking to Padraig Harrington, as you know. 0818 715 815 5151 is the text. Padraig, we had a call about 5 minutes ago from someone saying I'm doing the leaving cert, okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't know whether it's one of your boys. I don't know what age your boys are. Have you got a leaving cert in the house? I hope not.
Junior cert.
Okay. How's that going? Are you okay? Everything okay? And
so I think it's so far. Okay.
Now, this man was saying that he wanted to. His name is Tommy Morris, but he's not. I thought he was doing his leaving cert. No, he's an examiner, an invigilator. Right, and so he's gone into he had to run in there, but he wanted to say he contacted you years ago. Would you come and see somebody in an intensive care unit who was terminally ill, a 16-year-old? And the point he wanted, by the way, you didn't get publicity because you didn't want publicity, you didn't seek publicity. You came to the intensive care unit at relatively short notice. You spent an hour with the child and then you kept in touch with the young teenager, 16-year-old. He just wanted to get that on the record of your decency in public and in private. You must have done well in your maths in the leaving. Did you qualify as an accountant, Padraig?
I passed my exams, so I've never attained my articles.
And how'd you do in maths in your leaving?
Maths would have been my easiest subject, but I wasn't. I was more into sport than anything
don't
else.
Don't tell me, now, Borrick, don't tell me you got A. You got A in honours maths and you're leaving.
No, my mother, okay. And my mother's going to kill me. She's listening to this. She ran a bookmakers. You know, okay. She managed bookmakers.
Brilliant.
But back in the 80s,
okay.
And she could sit there. And when the assistant at the front was typing in the Yankees, that you know the multiple bets, she would work it out in her head behind her.
Wow!
And would know how to. She would like a six different bets and combinations. My mum could work out in her head. So we in my family, numbers. We've never been scared of numbers. We've been brought up that just numbers now, not the complicated math stuff of equations and things. So,
and would you do
a good role model?
It's incredible, and what an incredible skill. And would you do Sudoku? Would you still be interested in numbers?
I got bored with Sudoku.
You what? You get bored with it?
Well, it's Sudoku is a routine. It's dice and slice. Just keep dicing and slicing.
Okay.
To be honest, the annoying thing about Sudoku, if you were doing a race, you would actually predict a number and go and see if it's right and go backwards, because that's quicker than actually trying to really, really logically work it out. So I would, if you produced a difficult Sudoku, I'd sit down and love to try and do it. But I'm not going to sit and do 10 Sudoku. And I've no interest.
And how do you relax?
I play Clash of Clans.
You play what?
It's a game. I play a game called Clash of Clans.
Clash of Clans. Yeah.
One of these war. You know, where you build up.
My youngest played them.
Yeah. My kid started me off, and I'm literally if anybody plays it, I maxed everything out at this stage. I have a few walls to go. And if I get to the end of it, I'm going to stop. If I actually finish it, I'm stopping, because it takes hours every day.
Brilliant. It's addictive. So we're talking about the Clash of Clans between the PGA and Liv, and we're talking to Padraig Harrington. But Padraig, I wonder what would happen if there was a golf tournament in Saudi, and if all the players, including yourself, that they so value, that they so want, obviously, that they were prepared to offer big money, and now the merger has happened. I wonder what would happen if one of the players on the 18th, after the final putt, took off his polo shirt or whatever, and underneath was a vest with a slogan on it, free the name of a blogger or a woman that was in prison. What do you think the reaction would be?
They've obviously had plenty of golf events, professional golf events in Saudi Arabia. They used to have it on the European Tour. What would happen now? Well, that would be a brave move.
Didn't Lewis Hamilton at the Grand Prix in Saudi, didn't he wear a Pride helmet?
And again at the World Cup in Qatar, people tried to wear the Pride T-shirts, was it, into the stadiums? Yeah, they got stopped. And then eventually they were, you know, there was enough of them doing it. I think that was allowed to happen after a while. I'm not quite sure how that worked out. But yeah, it's a very brave person who takes a stand in somebody else's country, under their rules at that stage. Lewis Hamilton obviously is a big enough, you know, person that he could do it and fair play to him. Look, there is nobody defending
the human rights. I know that.
Are we doing enough?
Yeah.
That is ultimately the question. Are we doing enough? Are our governments doing enough? If Saudi Arabia was a poor country, the world would exclude them.
No, I know.
Everybody wants what Saudi Arabia has. We all want to trade with Saudi Arabia. As I said, we sell stuff to Saudi Arabia. We export our dairy and our meat to Saudi Arabia. Our military technology ends up in Saudi Arabia.
Well, we trade with them.
Parts
that can be used for civilian use, and but we're not allowed. No one is allowed to sell directly to the Saudi military. But they can. You can sell, but I take your point.
You're being now like that's we know where it's going. We know what we're doing.
Yeah, exactly. Okay? I know that. And then to reinforce your point, Warwick, when Ireland was looking for to be elected to the UN Security Council, one of our pivotal supporters that we asked for support from, and they publicly gave us support, was Saudi Arabia. And also, and they were very influential because, as you know, given their position and their wealth and their geography, they have, if Saudi Arabia say they're voting for Ireland to be onto one of those coveted positions on the Security Council, they probably bring about 10 or 15 votes with them, which probably did make all the difference. So there is, I take your point fully, there is ambiguity there.
We do a lot of medical trade, don't we? I think we teach a lot of the doctors.
The Royal College of Surgeons.
That completely changes their culture. Okay. We're now training the most influential people in Saudi Arabia, the surgeons and the doctors. Can you imagine the influence they have on their society? That will change their society over time. It's slow, but there's nobody going to turn around and tell them what to do. You cannot... Literally, it is impossible. They'll only push back if you tell them what to do. And look, I guarantee you, you meet somebody from Saudi Arabia tomorrow, they'll be the nicest person in the world. They'll be very well traveled, very well grounded. So it's not like individually in any shape or form. This is a cultural thing that over time will change. But we'd love to happen. We'd love to be able to rush that change. And unfortunately, nobody has a magic wand that can happen.
But I take your point that the impact and the input and the influence might make a difference. Stay with us, Parik. 0818-715-815-51551 text. I'm talking to Parik Harrington.
Talk to Joe on 0818-715-815. Talk to Joe on 0818-715-815.
I'm talking to Parik Harrington. He won't go along with this, his modesty. Probably the greatest golfer ever in terms of even our people who don't play golf, his knowledge of him. Liam Davis. Parik, someone said to me, you have a YouTube channel where you give out tips for free, so to speak.
Oh, yeah, Paddy's Golf Tips. Everything I know about golf, I put on Paddy's Golf Tips on YouTube.
Okay.
So I did it during COVID on Instagram. I did it during COVID on my Instagram.
Yeah.
But I used to put one out every day, a minute tip. And now that we're talking about that, there is an Instagram owned by Meta, which is partly owned by the PIF fund.
Oh, God, we'll all go back to bed, Paul. Get under the duvet. So you're still doing that?
Oh, yeah. I love coaching. I love it. And I love changing people's minds. Actually, I'm quite, in my personal life, I like to argue devil's advocate and argue the opposite side. Even when I'm in the middle of ground or even on the opposite side, I go devil's advocate for the fun.
Will you come in and present live line then? You're an ideal presenter, Parik.
I'm starting to realise with Twitter there's no nuance at all. In a 180 character tweet, it's what you don't put in, people are not happy about, and what you do put in, people are not happy about, and the nuance that you try to get in there is missed. So I'm going to stick very firmly to golf, even though this is golf and my dog. That's it, and coaching.
Okay, what's your dog called?
Wilson.
Wilson. Wilson. Okay. Yeah, Liam. Wilson. Liam. Yeah. Liam Day. Who's he called after? Wilson the basketball on. What was that movie with Tom Hanks?
Wilson has been my sponsor for 25 years.
Oh, okay.
That's where we get it. Wilson,
brilliant. Okay.
Wilson staff. Yeah.
Liam Davis, you have a quick question for Parik, and it's not a tip. Go ahead.
It's not a tip. But I'm just an amateur now in relation to golf or whatever, but it always worries me when big business or money gets involved in sports of any kind. But my question to Parik is that in order to protect the integrity of the sport itself, as Parik has done over the years, will there be any representation on the boards, that the new board, whether it's the PGA board or whatever, going forward, in order to protect golf as a sport and the integrity of it? You know.
Well, what this seems to, for sure, the PGA Tour, by moving and acting now, have got the lion's share of the board. So they have a 60% share of the board. Okay. So they make all the decisions. As in, the PIF might give money, but the Tour are the ones. So the PIF are a minority stakeholder who are happy to be a passive investor if the Tour come up with new ideas. So if the Tour decide, as it was put, if the Tour decide to buy a new golf course, say like Pebble Beach, this is the example given, well, the PIF have an option to buy in with them. And that's, they're just looking for investment opportunities. So yes, the greatest thing the Tour got out of this, for if their back was to the wall, the one thing they got out of it is they got control of scheduling of world golf, which is the only win for them that they could possibly get. They now will be able to determine when and where tournaments are played, which actually might mean that the PGA Tour have a more world dominant position, which sometimes some of the other tours have complained that they're too dominant. But this will give them more dominance in the game of golf in the world.
Will the professional golfers have an input into how things go forward and
yeah, how it's handled in the future? Yeah, I think this is one of the thing with this. All the golfers were blindsided. Nobody knew this was coming. And a lot of them are, the lack of knowledge isn't helping, but a lot of them are dismayed by what's happened. So when we find out what's happened, it would be a little clearer on why it's happened. But the Tour should act in our best interests. I have to sit here and think that they acted in our best interest this time, and they did something that we don't know about because they needed to do it. But if it was the players who were doing it without the knowledge, they wouldn't have done this deal. The players are ecstatic at the moment. There's a smaller field playing for more money at the moment on the PGA Tour. It's everybody has made because 48 players left. The players are doing, like, there's no, we need more. And there was no jealousy of the guys who have gone, because the players who have stayed all got more in PIP money and prize money, and there's more opportunity. So this is not what the players wanted. But sometimes I assume that logically that the directors acted with knowledge that the players don't have, and that knowledge has to be something to do with the lawsuit.
But do the players have any representatives on the PGA board?
Yes. There's a number of committees. Yes, the players are very strongly recommended. It is owned by the players. Okay. Ultimately, the players decide. If the players decide tomorrow to get rid of the board, they have the ability and power to do that. They can get rid of Jay Monahan if they so want to. Mm-hmm. It is owned and by the players, and the board are selected by us to run it. So the players are the shareholders and the board are the board. The board are not actually shareholders.
Yeah, but this is the Jay Monahan who last year said this when the LIV started. He said the Saudi Arabians have a lot to answer about 9/11 and the number of people and Bin Laden and the number of Saudis. He forgot that fairly quickly, didn't he?
Well, I do actually want to say something about that.
Okay.
But Jay has backtracked on that. Yeah. Why? Why is he backtracked? There's something we don't know. There's a reason he has backtracked on that. And for me, it has to be financial in terms of where the Tour was stretched or something in the lawsuit. I do have to say something. Jimmy Dunn, who did this deal, lost. He had two floors in one of the Twin Towers. He lost his friends and his workforce in 9/11.
Who's Jimmy Dunn? Who's Jimmy Dunn, Parrick, just for...
Jimmy Dunn is the man who brokered the deal. He's on the board of the Tour.
Okay.
He's gone in and done this deal. He lost two floors in the Twin Towers. And he has come out and said, which I don't know enough about this, but he has come out and said that terrorists blew up the Twin Towers, so he should know. He was not in the office. Now, I really have a problem with this because I was in England in the early 90s, and continually the gutter press in Britain continually intermingled Ireland, Irish government, Irish people, and the IRA to blame on the atrocities. So they made it feel like the Irish people were to blame for the IRA bombings in the UK.
Yeah.
And this is exactly what that was an element of. I don't know. I know enough about Ireland, but I don't know enough about Saudi Arabia. And I can only take Jimmy Dunn's position because he should know. But blaming Saudi Arabia and their government seems very much like blaming Ireland for not doing enough to stop the IRA back in the early 90s. And maybe Saudi Arabia took their eye off the ball. Maybe, you know, but they could never have foreseen what was going to happen. Like it really do, like, if Jimmy Dunn is saying that he doesn't believe the Saudi Arabian government had anything to do with that, it was Osama bin Laden and his cohort from Saudi Arabia, just like the IRA, were Irish people, but they didn't have the support of the government and Irish people.
If someone, Jimmy Dunn, a quote from Jimmy Gunn to the Golf Channel, Padraig, if someone can find someone, if I can find someone that unequivocally was involved with the 9/11 massacre, I'd kill them myself. So he's fairly, well, and you explained why he's so upset about it.
Joe, I'm just saying, just a quick thing there on that end. We're so easily for us to blame people, everybody, you know, countries, you know, whether it be Syrians or you know, anybody that or Saudi Arabians, for things that happen as a general country and a general people. There are good people and there are bad people everywhere, you know, even in Ireland or anywhere in Europe. And it's wrong to tar everybody with the same brush.
But the difference is now, Saudi Arabia now isn't a democracy. We live in a democracy.
No, I understand that.
And the involvement of the Saudis, the Saudi hierarchy, so to speak, in 9/11 is a lot more contentious now than the awful, horrific atrocities in terms of the IRA. Of course, the Irish government had nothing to do, as Padraig said, of the Irish people with the IRA. There was always a 95% opposition to IRA Sinn Féin when there was violence. Now, that's changed now since the violence has stopped. But the situation in Saudi Arabia was a little bit more intertwined between the Saudi government and.
I'm not here to defend Saudi Arabia in any way. But that's a position you're taking there. Do you know that? You're assuming that the Saudi Arabian government, who trades, who America and Jimmy Dunn is doing business with, you're saying that they were actually involved?
I'm not saying they were involved. No, I'm not saying they were involved. But I read the 9/11 Commission report from beginning to end.
Okay, I didn't know that now.
It's my opinion, having read a lot of stuff, that the Saudi government, certain elements of the Saudi, you can't even call them a government because there's no elections out there as such, and women can't vote, and they flog bloggers, as you raised, Padraig. But anyway, your mother was mentioned by yourself, Padraig, if I can, and now you've unleashed a number of people who want to talk. Tom Corbett, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You want to remember Padraig's dad?
Well, a little story. I was a patient in St. Luke's in 2003.
Okay.
And I was out in the putting green. And there was a man watching me putting. And I said to him, "This is Parry Harrington's Ryder Cup putter."
Okay.
And the reply I got was, "Do you know who I am? I'm Parry Harrington's dad."
Ah.
"You're dead."
And was he a patient in St. Luke's?
No, he was visiting. They helped out.
Well, he was a patient.
Oh, was he? Okay.
My dad passed away in 2005 from cancer. So he might have been in remission at 2003, to be honest, as you said. But he had been a patient. Right. And we built the putting green in St. Luke's.
Oh, well done.
That's how I ended up building the putting green in Marley Park as well.
I was probably one of the first to use it.
Oh, magic.
Very good. I'm glad it gave you a little bit. And you know what? I'm even gladder that you're around today to tell me.
Padraig, you took the words out of my mouth. Well spotted. Because Tom just told us you were a patient in St. Luke's in 2003. That's 20 years ago. And as Padraig said, it's just great to hear you 20 years later.
Well
done.
It was a wonderful place at the time, you know. Okay. Everyone was very happy
still
there.
Still is, yeah,
you know,
still is.
We're on the one boat.
Padraig's father played Gaff for Cork, wasn't it? And he was a keen boxer and a horror.
I saw his dad playing in 1956 All-Ireland final against Galway.
That's 67 years ago, Tom.
Yeah, I was there.
Well done.
I was there, yeah.
And was he good?
I'm more of a hurler myself. I'd be in Dublin on Sunday.
Okay.
For Kilkenny and Galway.
Was Padraig's dad a good ball player?
He was a halfback. He was a great
man.
Footballer.
A big man, because he was in the Guards.
He played, I think, 2 years, 56 and 57 finals.
Okay. And was your dad a good... He was a good golfer as well, wasn't he, Padraig?
He wasn't a great golfer, but he was competitive. My dad was a beautiful sportsman. Everything he did, he was a beautiful sportsman. And you mentioned he wasn't a boxer, but he won the Garda Championship. And he gave up boxing after he won the Garda Championship, because as he moved up the matches, he basically, when he got to the final, he hit the guy so many times, but the guy was obviously better and stronger. And he didn't go down. And my dad was frustrated that, you know, why would he take this punishment? And my dad just didn't like the concept of it at all. But he was a lovely movement, lovely sportsman, like Gaelic football, like a beautiful player, and then very competitive at golf later on. But he was really, 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 really poor. Technically, golf, like it's as bad a golf swing as I've ever seen in my entire life.
And do you remember the first time you bet him on a playing 18 holes? What age were you?
No idea. I would have been like, you know, the kids are really good now. I would have been 13 years of age by the time I beat him. I would have been maybe 14. Like I know, but the kids now are like scratch golfers at 12.
Okay.
I was playing for Ireland at 15 years of age, or 5. Like, that's a huge difference.
Yeah.
It's a different game now. There's so many kids who play golf now. There's so many kids, and there's a huge mental health problem with golf now, because the kids are, well, it's a very selfish game, and the kids are playing, and the problem with golf is you'll always plateau. So it doesn't matter how good you get, you're going to hit a stage where your results are going to be underperforming, and it's very public. They publish the scores all the time. You have no team to hide behind. So we have mental health problems on the tour with guys, young guys coming on, and the expectations. So you should, if you play golf, keep playing team sports. It really helps the balance later on in life when golf gets really difficult.
Yeah, do your own boys play?
No. Yes, no. They're not. They don't turn around and go, "Hey, I'm going up playing golf." But if I turn around and says, "Will you come play golf?" They play. So they don't have their own drive. They play other sports, but they don't have their own internal drive like I would have had. I was playing 45 holes a day. For the summers when I was 12, 13, 14 years of age.
Incredible. Incredible. But you're saying if they did take a bit, well, they might take even more interest in golf, but you'd say to them, team sports as well.
Oh, 100%. When you play a team sport, you can play well and the team loses. You better not celebrate. You can play a team sport and you can play badly and the team win. You better get with your team. As in, it's your team. You have to respect what's going on. You have to understand other players playing well and bad. It's so different than golf. Golf, this is why it's very, very, an individual sport are just not great for the mental health, for young people. There's good things in it. There's no doubt.
Yeah,
discipline not to cheat. You know, that's probably one of the best things. It teaches the educator. It teaches you, you know, not to cheat. It teaches you responsibility. It teaches you lots of great life lessons, golf. When the kids who are so focused on a plateau, there's nowhere to go. And it could take a year to get out of that hole. And if they don't truly love the game, they'll give it up.
And was that ever like that for you, Padraig?
I wasn't that good.
Okay.
I was always very competitive.
You weren't that good.
You know,
okay, that quickly.
In a different sense, I only ever gradually got better. I didn't jump from, like, I wasn't, Like, even when I turned pro, people didn't think I was going to do that well. I know they hate this. When I was 18 years of age, I went from junior golf to youth golf. Okay. And I didn't get picked on the training panel of the top 20 players in Ireland.
Oh, God.
So I wasn't considered the top 20. Now,
do you remember, like, do you remember getting that news?
Yeah, we rang them up and said, "Oh, you must have missed the name." And they said, "No, it was correct." We're like, I was the best, and I didn't get on. So I could very much be overlooked at that stage. Like 6 months later, I was playing on the full Irish team. So I'd gone. I didn't play under 20s. I played the full team and won all my matches. So, like, it was weird. And that's why I don't like committees. How they came up with that decision, I have no idea.
And who, and when the word got out that you weren't even in the top 20, was it your mom or your dad that helped you get over that?
My dad. My dad would have been the one. You know, my dad would have been. My mother is would have been. Yeah, my dad would have loved. My dad was a policeman. He was probably the most unsuitable policeman there ever was.
Was he?
As I just said, he wouldn't give a summons or arrest anybody. He'd give them their money. If he found somebody drunk, he'd give them the money to go home in the bus.
Good man.
Down in Irish Town in Donnybrook, they will tell you that. People will tell you the story. He the worst thing you get is a kick up the backside and go home. You know, He would have been a great sports psychologist or coach. Even in 89 for me, I did accountancy at night. The reason I did accountancy at night is I didn't know what was in the world. I had no idea about sports psychology. Yeah. I had no idea I could become a sports agent. I would have loved those jobs.
Yeah.
80s Ireland was, God, it was miserable, wasn't it? It really was depressing.
Just one before the break, if I can, Padraig. Who's this? Brian Murphy remembers. Who do you remember meeting when you were nine, Padraig or his dad?
No, I met. Good evening. Good afternoon, Joe.
Good afternoon, Brian. Say hello to Padraig.
Good afternoon, Padraig. Your dad afternoon. And I met in Irish Town Police Station when I was 9 years old.
Okay. What were you up for, Brian?
I wasn't up for that. My mother was the cook, Annie Murphy, in Irish Town Police Station.
Oh, God.
He took me to Crow Park on shoulders. First time ever.
Oh, God.
In Crow Park.
That was Padraig's dad took you to Crow Park.
Dad took me, because I was in our way on a Sunday. They used to get fed in the police station on a Sunday.
Okay.
And she was cooking, and I was under her feet. She was a widow.
Right.
And he took me to Crow Park. I couldn't tell you who we were seeing. I haven't got a clue, but he took me on his shoulders over the stiles, the old stiles, and he took me back to Irish Town Police Station when it was over, Padraig.
That's incredible.
Yeah, thank you for telling me.
And also, I met yourself with my daughter when you played in Sparwell when you were blindfolded. I met you twice up there.
In the charity,
I think once you were beaten by a blind man.
I was. I have to say that.
I have photographs of you and me and my daughter and a little girl that I can't trace because we took a photograph of her with you and I have them around my mantelpiece.
Oh, well done. And Padraig,
I spoke to you at your clinic out in the north side or south side there where you had a big clinic. Okay. Out in one of the hotels.
So you play golf, do you, Brian?
I play in Sutton Golf Club.
Oh, well done.
I was in Hollystown for nearly 20 years, but we closed down and I went to Sutton 4 years ago, which is a gem of a place.
Lovely.
An absolute gem.
I have to say, that blind competition, my old caddy arranged it for the guy.
That's right, your old caddy was with you.
Tell us about it, Padraig. Yeah. Go ahead.
I got beaten. And to this day, I have questions. this guy was the best seeing blind golfer I've ever seen.
Okay.
Well, the other man that was with you, the other man that was there that day that was guiding him around had a guide dog. So I don't know which was the best.
Okay. They were there on the day.
It's lovely to talk to you and well done for everything you've done for golf.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Well said. Well said, Brian.
God bless you.
And you say Breda is listening, is she, Padraig? Your mother?
Yes, she would be listening. Yes,
okay.
Indeed.
Say with us. More people want to talk about your dad and you and things you've done that weren't in the public domain for charity, especially. Joe@rt.ie, 51551 is the text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
I'm talking to Padraig Harrington. Mary Lou, you agree with Padraig. You lived in Saudi Arabia when?
I lived there, Joe, throughout the late 1990s and also the noughties. And then we visited after that as well. So I've seen a lot of change there.
And as far as everyone is hoping, it was far the better.
Absolutely, Joe. I mean, I was working out there and I saw very slow change in my time.
Okay.
But then I began to notice, for example, I was a flight attendant for various wealthy people out there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you would have to, if you married, for example, at that time, you had to resign. It's like the old civil service here back in the day. Now, that's all changed in 2006. Mm-hmm. So I noticed we had a ball out there. The people are lovely. The locals are very nice. I mean, the Saud family or regime, some may say, I mean, they are actively cracking down on, you know, terrorists and fundamentalists.
They're very worried about fundamentalism. That's why they get involved in other countries as well. And the Muslim Brotherhood are very, very scared of.
Sorry, just one gentleman rightly pointed out that it would be like connecting all Irish people support the IRA or the government.
Yeah, Padraig was saying that,
it's not true. Yeah, it's not true. And also, just to make the point that, yes, we hear the bad things, like, for example, how they lifted the ban on women driving only recently.
Yeah, yeah.
Those things always get through. But what they don't tell you is that they're hoping to open it up more as a, an all-round attraction and for tourism. I mean, we used to go out in Saudi, a group of us, on Harley Davidsons into the desert. You had a barbecue afterwards. I mean, the people were lovely. Also, you know, we'd go camping. And once you get to know sort of people within the compounds, which are heavily guarded, obviously, but, you know, they don't, as long as you, it's like when in Rome, behave like the locals. And they're more flexible than people think.
Yeah, but in Saudi Arabia, like the punishment for some crimes is absolutely horrific. If you commit, that wouldn't be regarded as crimes here. I know they are in some other countries of the same persuasion, but if you're caught committing adultery, you may be stoned to death, sentenced to death by a court. By the way, there's no appeal system over there. If you're caught having premarital sex, you'd be sent to prison and be flogged.
Yeah.
And for flogged.
Yeah.
And if you're caught stealing, it's not uncommon for thieves to have their feet and their hands chopped off. But you were saying it's maybe slow. It looks like it might be pacing up a bit, but you think it's changing.
They're aware of all these. And these laws are true. However, you know, this thing about chopping off hands, this is, I mean, we never, you know, never heard of it. Now, the majority, I knew a pilot who actually went to what's called Chop Chop Square. I just think
that's it.
And I don't know why. He was just a young guy. He did notice that the people who were put to death, it was very quick, and it wasn't stoning, and they were always either, and you would see it in the papers, always either big time drug dealers or rapists, ironically.
Yeah, so the controlled media told you, but still it's a horrific, 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 barbaric punishment. Jay, thanks.
Chopping off people's hands every Friday. That's really gone out. That's a bit old-fashioned. We're still doing.
As Padraig rightly pointed out, in the world that we now live in, with the internet and social media, and being able to find out things within 10 seconds. Now, they have clamped down on social media, but things are changing a lot quicker than they used to change. Thanks, Mary Lou. Jay O'Connan. You're quick. You come and praise, as everyone does. You come and praise Padraig. Go ahead. You're a massive fan.
Sure.
Sure, I'm 63, so I've been watching Pori for a long, long time playing golf. But apart from that, lately I've been following his coaching on Facebook. And it's been just some difference to my golf. I've been kind of, not rubbish, but I used to be okay, but I got injured as a jockey. But he's coaching on your grip and how you swing has turned it inside out within a matter of months. So
well done.
I wanted to thank him for that, because it's hard to coach people and it's hard to get across to people the right way. But I find him so direct and so straight. You have to be proud of the man. You know what he's done for us.
And what were you a professional? You were Jay O'Connan.
Professional national hunt.
Yes.
Exactly. So we do fall off a lot over jumps. So,
and if you don't ride horses, do you?
Under no circumstances you get me up on one of the at 25 mile an hour going over a fence. I went to the Grand National this year.
If they were only 25 mile an hour, we'd be all right. Because around 40, they used to be going.
Wow.
So listen. You know, you get a lot of falls and you break.
What have you broken, Joe?
Oh, between shoulder, arm, leg, you name it, my vertebrae, wrists. You kind of break everything within the.
How many times have you broken your leg?
Twice.
And then the other leg?
No, well, one each.
Okay.
I've only two, so I broke two.
Okay. That's it.
And my shoulder dislocations and. They're pinned and stuff. So your body changes. So, and then my golf got rubbish. It got from being a 10, 11 handicap of going right out to was nearly a one-legged player at one point. But it lately, since I kind of took it back up at 60, I'm playing really better now, and physically I'm feeling better. And that's down to physical exercise. A regime of exercise, of course,
and the free daily. Remind people they're free. The free daily classes started during COVID by Padraig Harrington, and are still continuing.
Oh my God, they're fantastic!
And I know now, having listened to your organ recital there, Jay, of all your injuries, I know why I wouldn't get up on a horse, and I know why Padraig won't get up on a horse. By the way,
that's our life. We were brought up doing that, so it's only second nature.
Fair play to you, Joe. And lovely words as well. Appreciate it.
He's just a hero for us. So he'll never get lonely, no matter what country he's in, because there's a lot of us thinking of him.
Okay, well said. Yeah. Padraig, by the way, thanks, Joe. Were you ever injured playing golf, Padraig?
I have a disc replaced in my neck.
From
golf, yeah.
And did you ever get an injury while you were playing? Did you ever get hit by a golf ball?
My brother hit me with a golf ball when I was like 14 years of age.
Okay.
And he convinced me it was my fault. And I this big, you could nearly see the name of the golf ball in my skin.
Wow.
And I didn't tell my mum and dad, because I thought it was, well, I probably was 12. I thought it was my fault for so long.
Okay.
So yeah.
Okay.
But outside of that, playing wise, you hurt your wrists a lot. Everybody has something. I need a knee replacement, so I've struggled with both my knees.
Oh, do you?
Lower back, upper shoulders, neck. I'm trying to swing a golf club like a 20-year-old.
Okay.
Absolutely full tilt, and unfortunately, I have an obsession for doing it, so that I tend to do too much of it, overdo it, and that leads to repetitive injuries.
When might you have to go and get the knee looked at?
I need it done, but a knee replacement is 3 months, and I'm actually playing so well at the moment.
Absolutely.
I don't want to stop.
Tap your game.
Yeah.
Okay, quick break. joe@rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
joe@rt.ie. Today's live line is presented by that well-known argumentative chap, Padraig Harrington, who's also a golfer in his spare time. Magella Sheehan, what do you want to say to Padraig?
I want to say it's very nice to hear Padraig speaking. I know very little about golf.
Okay.
But he seems to be a really nice guy and very well able to do a lot of charity work. And you have to always acknowledge excellence. And that's the first thing I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
So, Padraig, what I want to say to you is that line in your tweet where you said, yes, my own country thought it was acceptable to lock up unmarried mothers as late as 1996, I would take huge, yes, issue with. Because, number okay, one, my own country, I, who are you talking about? Who in your own country? Because nobody in our country...
I'm talking to the world. I'm talking to the world.
Yeah,
not,
I know
not,
who
I'm
you're
talking,
talking to.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I know who you're talking to, but who are you talking about when you say my own country? Is it the people in your country? Because nobody in this country thought it was acceptable to lock up. Now, we look at that, to lock up unmarried mothers. Nobody. Nobody thought it was acceptable. Most of, now,
it?
If you want to be specific,
sorry, just,
then I'll
just
specify.
Ask you, who did it?
I would say, okay, you answer me. You wrote the tweet. You tell me who you thought did it. Would you think everybody thought it was acceptable?
No,
everybody did not
did
think it,
it
was acceptable.
But it did.
Okay.
But Magella did happen.
Society did.
Of course it did. And it was shameful. And it was shameful
society
that it happened.
Did this.
But yeah, okay,
okay,
let me answer.
Go ahead, Paul.
Yes.
Yeah, I will, of course,
sorry,
yeah.
The country I come from had it for a long period of time accepted if somebody knew about this, and I don't know who knew about it, but people knew about this. So if you read about it, and I know this is getting a little deep.
Okay, no worries.
A young person could be raped in their home by a family member, and she would be imprisoned, effectively institutionalized for that, okay? And the rapist would get away with it, okay? Who knew about that? Authority knew about that. The had to be in the doctor would have to know about it. The policeman would have to know about it. The policeman would tell the judge, who would have to know about that. Society knew about that, and they let it happen. It is beyond belief to somebody now, mm-hmm, that if you saw that, like, I know in the, not, we're talking not too long ago, we're talking, the Donnybrook mother and baby home used to walk the women down to the church and make them sit on their own away from the congregation like they were unclean. They did that. So people who went to church could see that happening. Mm. So society let this happen. Not everybody in society knew that. Oh, wait, I just finished. I was 18 years of age, let's say through the 80s, right? I didn't know this happened. God forbid I profited from the indentured slavery that those women went through. Imagine you use one of those hotels. Like, come on. Society was terrible to let that happen. If you knew, I'm not saying everybody knew, but it happened.
Yeah,
politicians
must
have known.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm curious, you know what? You are 100% right that you know, in the end of the day, the problem with Twitter, and this is something that I will make sure I avoid forever again. The problem with Twitter,
yeah,
it's a small thing. So you can only write a certain amount of words. And clear enough,
yeah,
when you see my country, you're thinking, I think everybody. I'm saying it happened in my country and people must have,
yeah,
known. People in authority obviously knew. Mm-hmm. And they covered it up. And they thought it was,
yeah,
okay. Which is,
yeah,
I think we can all agree that was shocking. And no, I didn't mean to say to you, I didn't mean to suggest in any sense of the word, and obviously it's a very short form that you can't do.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't mean to suggest that people agreed with it. In like 99.9% of people didn't know about it. But, you know,
yeah,
the 0.1%.
Yeah,
and we'll agree on that. I didn't mean to offend you because you clearly
course,
take
okay,
great offence with it. And
yeah,
there's no way I meant everybody knew about it. But my
okay,
God.
Yeah,
could you imagine,
yeah,
if you did know about
it? Of course. And you speak very powerfully about it. And of course, nobody could condone what happened at that time. And of course, the powers that be, the church, the people in power, the people in authority, seemed to turn a blind eye, or at least, thank God we've come away from that. Thank God those were the bad old days. But it's just in a tweet,
that
comes across that way.
Okay, well, Padraig is
And for international readers,
yeah,
Padraig, you know, that they may think that in a legislative way it was acceptable up to 1996. That must be made clear that that's not what you meant. Do you know what I mean? The language was careless,
I think in a legislative way it was acceptable. I think the I think the politicians did accept it. I think the powers accepted it.
It was never acceptable to lock up unmarried mothers in the late 90s. The last Magdalene laundry closed in 1996, thank God. But it's just what I would find a little bit offensive.
I can fully agree that you find it offensive the way you're interpreting the tweet. I'm not
the only one that would interpret it that way.
And I agree that you can interpret it that way, and that's the problem with Twitter and writing something down. If you don't put everything in, people see that. Yeah. And if you write something, people...
Okay.
But I have to say, it was, as in it was at the top, politicians that we voted for had to have known that this was happening.
I'm not talking about the issue. I've already said it was shameful. I know exactly what you're saying, and I fully agree with you there. I'm not debating the actual issue of it. I'm just saying, in the tweet and the way you word it, it has to be really careful.
Point made and point replied to. Patrick, thanks, Magella. But Patrick, the danger is when you say so powerfully there, and people have forgotten this, that these women were working in laundries. They weren't the laundries for the nuns. They were laundries that were sending vans out every day from Donnybrook and Sean McDermott Street around to the Gresham to get their laundry cheaply done by these, another powerful phrase, indentured slaves. Is the problem, and we were living off that, so to speak. But can you not say the same now about the Saudi government? That golfers are going to make more money because of the oppression of the Saudi government.
100% you can say it. That's why I brought it up. People who knew this did it back, like, thought this was acceptable and gained from it. I am saying that hopefully it's not 25 years time, but hopefully in 25 years time, the Saudis will look back and say, oh my God, did we really do that? Did we really allow that? Okay. And I'd love to have to wave a magic wand and it disappear.
Okay.
There's
loads of people on this. Carmen O'Brien, what do you want to give Patrick? What are you saying you have belonged to his family?
Hello, Patrick. How are you? I love everything you do for God. Listen, I'm not sure if you know this story, but your grandfather, Mr. Alfie McNamara, your mom's dad, we were a family and we moved in with him in 1972. Okay. And just wanted to let you know that, big long story about it, but the long story short would be that my dad was a barman in Vaughan and Terenure, and your grandfather used to go in there all the time, and my dad, they were having a chat, and he was saying that where we lived in the flat was getting worse because there were squatters and all that kind of stuff. So he said, why don't you come and live with us, live with me in my house in Drimna, and I'm going to live with my daughter Bernadette, I think was her name. And that never happened, and he stayed there. And my mom died young, right? So your dad was still there with the family and whatever. So when he died, my dad, we bought the house anyway in the end. There's some things that my brother had found in the attic that your grandfather used to always talk about. He had a son out in Goose Bay in Newfoundland, I think. Must have been your mom's brother or something.
And you're saying, Carmel, you have some memorabilia.
My brother has them, when he cleared out. And we were always saying,
with your permission and with Padraig's permission afterwards, and I suspect with Breda, Padraig's mother's permission, we'd put you in touch with your other. Yes. You think you have some family memorabilia. That'd be incredible.
My brother has. I don't know whether you knew the story or not, Padraig.
I would a little bit of the story, not the full story at all.
We're gonna have to get you to do it. Do you think you are?
I think my grandfather, they had fostered a lot of children, so that's where that came from.
Right.
I might say foster, probably adoptions, actually.
Wonderful. Thanks, Carmel. Maliki Courtney, thanks, Carmel. And we'll put you in touch, we promise. Mutual agreement. Maliki, who do you remember?
I remember Patrick. I don't know, Patrick wouldn't know me, but I remember Parig's dad, and his uncle Tighe and myself were up in Hoth together. Mm-hmm. Tighe was transferred from Clontarf.
Oh, he was a, guard as well.
He was, yeah, and a great footballer, a good golfer.
I have two brothers, currently a guard, and four uncles in the guards.
Wow.
We're in the guards. But my uncle Tighe wasn't much better than my dad as a guard. There's a great story about him. The station in, I think it was Clontarf, gets a call from a very grand lady who is complaining about the kids are playing football against her wall on the green outside, and will you send down a guard to move them on? So the sergeant sends Tighe down to move the kids on, and an hour later the woman rings up and says, I'd like to speak to the sergeant about the kids playing football outside. And the sergeant says, well, I've sent the guard down. I've dispatched him to sort it out.
Yeah.
And he says, well, that's the problem. They're using his tunic as a goalpost and he's playing football with them.
That'd be tight.
Brilliant.
That would be tight.
Thanks, Malik.
Tiger was a legend in Hoth with the Nether.
Okay.
He was loved out there.
Well done. Quick break, and I'm galloping to the end. Malky Courtney, thanks indeed. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Patrick, I was remiss there. I asked you, did your two boys play golf? And does Caroline play golf?
No, she doesn't have the patience.
If
I tee the ball up, she'll hit it and she's good.
Yeah.
And then she might think, I'll play. But she gets worse every day. And the expectations are going one way and the game is going the other way. No patience for the game. a complete perfectionist. Physically, she'd be good, but she does the mental side of it, the frustration at how good one shot is and how bad the next shot she just can't handle.
And is that the most important thing? Well, obviously the skill, you playing 45 holes a day when you were 12, 13, but the mental aspect of it.
Well, it depends on the standard. It literally goes, when you start off, it's completely technical. And when you get to my level, it's 99.9% mental. So it's all the way in between for most people. So it depends. Like, as a beginner, you're going to think so much, whereas a player like me, I'm actually trying to train myself not to think at all.
Wow. And you wouldn't be saying to yourself on a critical putt, I hope Caroline is watching, or I hope Caroline is not watching. I hope my dad's looking down on me. I hope Breed and my mom is...
I really hope... I hope God isn't interested in anything I'm doing on the golf course. He has more important things to be doing. I don't use any, and nothing to do with God. I don't use superstitions. I don't use religion. I don't use anything like that come on. There's more important things than that. I'm just doing it. And I'm not great mentally at times. And the worst thing you can do in golf, and I'll say this to all the listeners who are into the golf, I can give you a tip to play better. Be nice to yourself. Say nice things to yourself, because golfers say the most abusive things to themselves as they're going along.
Okay.
If your friend said what you say to yourself personally...
Very good
point. They'd be no longer your
friend. Well said. Patrick Harrington, good to meet you, Margaret Fodick, and kind regards to you and your family, Caroline, and the two boys, Kieran and Patrick, and your mother, Breeda. Thanks for your time. I didn't think it was going to be 75 minutes, but we could do another 75 looking at all the people who know you, your father, remember your mother, and the book, it goes on and on and on. Patrick, look after yourself. Stay safe.
I have to say this, Joe.
Yes, sir.
I thought it was a memorial service for me at one stage.
I thought you were presenting the programme at one stage. Today's programme was presented by Patrick Harrington. Tommy O'Sullivan was on sound. The BCO was Shane Galvin. Producer Dave Sherry. Series producer Annette Egan. Good Amila Mahagadafarik. And Catherine Thomas is next.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.